out, you magic twanger, Froggy. Here comes the colonel.
Yes, yes, of course. One clown after another elbowing their way in here because they can't get their own radio program, can you? Ha ha. Yes, right. So they got to come in here and disrupt a serious science program. Okay, welcome back to the second half hour of The Promise of Tomorrow here on the Science News Radio Network, exploring the business of emerging science, nanotechnology, open innovation. I'm your host. I'm Colonel Mason. So glad to have you back again. We're going to get back with a final word from Christy Haynes, the brilliant chemist from the University of Minnesota, who is presenting Seers in Blood, Vibrational Spectroscopy at the PITCON conference that's going on at McCormick Place in Chicago, March 2 through 6. You can find out more about that at pitcon.org. That's PITTCON.ORG. So it'll be another interesting half hour. We're going to, at the end of the program, of course, we have listener comments and the voice of reason. And before we get back to Christy Haynes, let's step over to our fountain of useless information we keep here on the set. And the useless fountain of the fountain of useless information, he speaks with a lisp, incidentally. He can't pronounce useless information. He calls himself the fountain of youth. Information, the fountain of youth, yes, of course. All right, rummage around here in the coin jar a little bit, and for today's query, huh? What do you say?
Well, to the fountain of youthless information, how can I help you?
Yes, so we see we have awakened the spirit of the fountain by throwing in the coins. All right, oh, spirit of the fountain, here's a tricky question for you. Supposing that you're hit by lightning. Well, I guess it doesn't matter with you, hit by lightning. You're a fountain. I mean, me. Which one of the five senses would I be likeliest to lose if hit by lightning? Okay, hit by lightning. What of my five senses am I likeliest to lose if I'm hit by lightning, okay?
I have given you my answer, and now you may tell me.
Ooh, the spirit of the fountain knows the answer. If I'm hit by lightning, which of the five senses am I likeliest to lose? If you thought sight, you're wrong. It's not sight. It's hearing. Yeah, you hit by lightning, you lose your hearing. All right, back to our program. We're going to get back to our interview in just a minute with Christy Haynes. She's got a few more things to say to us before we say goodbye. Christy, of course, is making a presentation at PITCON, the famous PITCON conference. More about that at pitcon.org. That's PITTCON.ORG. It's going to be held at McCormick Place in Chicago, March 2 through 6, coming right up. It's a classic conference, been going on for years, and it's not one to miss. So you'll want to be sure and enjoy that. Christy is going to be making a presentation, a bioanalytical presentation on Seers in Blood. That'd be S-E-R-S in Blood and Vibrational Spectroscopy. She's using nanotechnology to do some pretty wonderful things. And if you listen to the previous half hour, you know all about it. But before we go, I wanted to see if she could give us a prediction of the future. So let's get back to the telephone and Christy Haynes. All right, Christy, I want you to put on your meditation cap here for just a little bit. Kind of look down the line, maybe 5, 10, 15 years or so, maybe more, and give us a kind of a peek into the future. Where do you see your research going and those of your colleagues? And what do you think we will have at the end of a certain period of time, 5, 10, 15, 20 years, that sort of thing?
That is a hard question to answer. For me, I see a really interesting place where studies related to the immune system and toxicology and nanomaterials and analytical methods hopefully converge on one another, and you get to a point where you're really using some of these technologies and materials to do useful therapeutic and diagnostic things. It takes so long to get something approved by the FDA that, you know, if you come up with a perfect thing today, you know, 10 years from now or 15 years from now, you might be at a place where you're approved and it's generally useful. I think maybe this is too broad scope for what you're asking, but one thing I really hope in 5 or 10 or 15 years is that we see a lot more diversity among the scientists that are participating in research at this level. Specifically in the case of women, you know, we're small numbers right now. The number of bachelor's degrees in chemistry is about half and half between men and women. PhDs, I think it's something like 34% women, and then if you look at research faculty at kind of top tier schools, it's something like maybe 13% women. And so there is this huge drop off, and I just think it's bad for a lot of reasons. I think it means we have less diversity in terms of the people that are generating ideas. We certainly have less diversity in the role models, and I think I see a lot of movement for people that want to try and make that change. And so I hope that we really see effects of that in 5 or 10 or 15 years.
All right. You see, currently with your colleagues, a lot of biases or let's say egos, turf wars, and that sort of thing. I understand that goes on a lot in science. How about in your area?
Yeah, I have not experienced a lot of that myself, I have to say. I generally, when I hear some of the stories about what people have experienced, I kind of can't believe it. I happen to work in a department where I think, I know I'm treated very well, and I always feel like I have a seat at the table if I wanted to. But there are a lot of cases where that's not what happens. And just figuring out the pipeline problem, you know, why women are dropping out in these intermediate years when they're making decisions about what jobs to apply for or what graduate programs to apply for, this is a really hard problem. And I think, finally, there are lots of people thinking about it. Certainly one of the things that has come to my attention in recent years is this concept of implicit bias. And probably lots of people have seen this, taken these tests online where you, hit a key to associate a discipline with a gender. So do you think that women are more likely to be in humanities and men are more likely to be in science? And, you know, both men and women have these socially implicit biases about what we expect scientists to look like and how we expect them to act. And I think that, you know, the more we are aware of that, the more we can actively counteract it, you know, the more diversity that we'll have within the scientific field and the better off everybody will be. But personally, I have had a great ride. I've had some mentors in my corner that have pushed me when I definitely didn't think I could do something, and I'm very appreciative of that.
Well, we're lucky. We've had some giants in science that have been women. Madame Curie, Marie Curie is one that comes quickly to mind. And now you get to be a pioneer. All right, Christy Haynes, University of Minnesota. Going to be speaking at the PittCon Conference of Occomi Place in Chicago. That's going on the 2nd through the 6th of March. And register before the 10th of February, which is coming up real quick. And you can save a $150 discount. Christy's going to speak on SIRS in blood and vibrational spectroscopy, which she gave us a very, very good teaser performance here just a little bit ago in the program. Thanks so much, Christy, for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
And this is a good time to remind those of you listening on radio, this program can be heard in its entirety, commercial-free, online, webcast at promiseoftomorrow.biz. Christy told me, apart from the interview, she said, you know, it was very touching. She said, whenever I had doubts about myself, she said, and people would encourage me to move on and do more and to make something important. She said, and I have these doubts. And I thought, well, I've got to do it because I've got to prove them right. And I thought that was just a great attitude. Kent Sathoff from ERCOT, the energy guru from ERCOT, was with us last week. We didn't have time to use the whole interview, so I wanted to bring him back again this week for that burning question that's going through everybody's mind about how our antiquated power line system, the energy grid, how susceptible is it to terrorists?
You know, as far as the antiquated electric system itself, I think that's mainly addressing that, you know, a lot of the infrastructure is old. You know, we've got certainly some transmission lines that are over 50 years old.
Oh, sure.
And also, it's very difficult to build new transmission lines because, it's the not in my backyard feeling that people don't like large transmission lines mm-hmm. where they can see them or certainly not on their property. So there's been a lag in building transmission, particularly in other parts of the country. but ERCOT is probably better off again than other parts of the country, in that that being with totally within one state, our only regulator is the Public Utility Commission of Texas.
Mm-hmm.
And so if someone wants to build a transmission line in ERCOT, that's where they go for approval. Where if someone wants to build a major transmission line, say from Connecticut to Ohio, they've got several state jurisdictions that they have to deal with,
yeah,
plus the federal Energy Regulatory Commission. So in general, it's probably easier to build transmission in ERCOT than other parts of the country.
All right. That helps me feel a little better, at least for living in Texas. And you had mentioned the worry about cyber. I presume you would be referring to like maybe the Stuxnet virus that hit the SCADA systems in Iran. Is that what you were referring to?
That was one manifestation of that threat. That's right. And we obviously can't go into any detail, but we've got extensive security systems on our computers, and so do the transmission service providers and generators that we interface with on a computer-to-computer basis. And that's certainly high on the radar screen to make sure we have the protections in place to thwart any type of cyber attack on the system.
Well, yeah, that was a pretty big wake up for a lot of people when Stuxnet hit Iran, because Iran thought it was totally safe and even had their network offline, and there's some suggestion that it was sabotaged with just a simple thumb drive or something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, cyber attacks are certainly a real threat, and we devote a lot of resources to mitigating that threat.
All right, I noticed that one of the things that ERCOT performs is a financial settlement for the competitive wholesale bulk power market. And so, are you dealing then with who gets to sell power to? The different consumers? I mean, because the rates are going to be vary between, let's say, wind or coal or whatever. And how do you do that?
Essentially, the generators really make arrangements with buyers to sell their product,
mm-hmm.
and that's determined by the market. Here at ERCOT, we run a day-ahead energy market where buyers and sellers can put in offers to sell and bids to buy electric energy. And those arrangements are facilitated and accounted for through our day-ahead market. Then, real-time, we operate the system in the most economical way possible, given any type of security constraints,
mm-hmm.
so we maintain that N-1 security I talked about earlier. And we do that by what we call security-constrained economic dispatch, where all the generators will submit essentially price curves to us about what they will be willing to sell their generation for at a certain generation level.
Okay.
And our security constrained economic dispatch takes those price curves and figures out what's the cheapest mix of generators to run based on those price curves.
Wow.
And then dispatches those generators accordingly. And all that has to be accounted for so that that people that sell are compensated appropriately, and people that buy pay appropriately. So we have a very extensive settlement system that does that.
That is fascinating, Kent. That is absolutely fascinating. And what's fascinating is that those of us who throw the light switch and turn on the the electric range, and we think, well, gee whiz, there's the power, and we don't realize all the intricacies it takes to make it happen in an economical way. And you've done a wonderful job of explaining that to us. I really appreciate that so much. Now, I understand you are a nonprofit corporation, and of course, you're subject to oversight by the Public Utilities Commission of Texas, and of course the legislature too. But also, ERCOT has members that includes consumers and cooperatives and power marketers that are members of ERCOT. I mean, are these stockholders?
No, we don't. There's no ERCOT stock you can buy. As you said before, we're a nonprofit corporation in the state of Texas, and we have you're very correct that we're under the oversight of the Public Utility Commission and the Texas Legislature. And the law that kind of set forth or created us specifies that we need to have various stakeholder groups represented on our board of directors. And those stakeholder groups, as you mentioned, include municipals, co-ops, investor-owned utilities, power marketers, independent power generators, and it also includes consumers, industrial consumers, commercial consumers, and residential consumers. They are all represented on the ERCOT board, and the board has the authority to approve any changes to our market and operating rules, and subject to PUC oversight. So it's a very democratic, setup in that all the stakeholders have representation, and we also get a significant amount of stakeholder input. We have over 600 stakeholder meetings a year where the stakeholder groups get together and hash out various issues regarding the wholesale and retail markets and electric operations.
So as a consumer, I would be eligible to sit on the board at ERCOT, how would I get to the board? Would I be nominated or something, or how does that work?
Well, the residential consumer representative on our board is the Office of Public Utility Council.
Okay.
That's designated through the statute. So, not as an individual consumer, but you do have a representative as a residential consumer through the Office of Public Utility Council.
So as a residential consumer, I have a token, is what you're saying.
Well, you can certainly call the Office of Public Utility Council if you've got a concern.
All right, I appreciate it. Well, Kent, I know you're retiring here pretty soon, but I would like you to put on the meditation cap for just a minute and kind of look into the future, because you're going to be kind of getting out of it. You're going to be kind of stepping back. And what do you see? Where do you see this all going? What do we have to look forward to 5, 10, 15, 20 years down the road?
That's a challenge. Because if you had asked me 15 or 20 years ago whether we would be operating like we are now, I never would have guessed it. But I think at least for the shorter term, maybe 5 to 10 years, we're probably going to see an increase in the amount of natural gas generation. And of course that could all go out the window if natural gas prices suddenly increase.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that's not many people are predicting that. So I think you'll see more natural gas generation. I think you're going to see more solar generation. I think solar is going to become a bigger player going forward. It's very minimal right now. And I think you may see some changes to our market, but that's really nothing new, because our market has really evolved over the past I guess 14 years now that we've been in operation. So I think you'll see continued evolution of the market. I think you'll see more natural gas generation and solar, and I think wind will continue to become a big part of our mix as well. And along with the increase in solar, I think you'll see probably more distributed generation. In other words, particularly in solar, where the generation will be located with the customer on a smaller scale. Mm-hmm. And that will bring its own challenges as far as operation and coordination.
Yeah, you're talking about on-site electrical generating by solar roofs, and maybe winds attached to buildings, and maybe people generating their power that is more power than they're getting off the grid, and it goes back onto the grid. And, of course, then that becomes another power supply among the 500. Is that what you're talking about?
That's right. And, you know, instead of having a few hundred plants, we could have thousands.
Yeah, I guess you could. Well, Kent, you've had a long and storied career. You've been a fascinating guest. You've been so good to be with us, and I want to thank Robbie Searcy, too, the press officer there for ERCOT, for running you down and getting you to our program today. It's been so good to have you. I really do appreciate it. Thank you so much.
Glad to be.
Thank you, Colonel. I enjoyed listening in on that. I always love hearing Kent. All the best things he knows.
And at this time, I want to thank you very much for those of you who have contributed to this program. We depend on contributions from listeners like you for the existence of this show. We're totally science community supported. So those of you who have contributed, thank you very much. Those of you who wish to can do so at our website, promiseoftomorrow.biz. On the right-hand side of your screen, you'll see a little tab there for donations. Just click the donations, and we appreciate all your help.
And now, we make time for the voice of reason. Listener comments, ideas, and suggestions.
All easy problems have already been solved. Only difficult ones remain. And the ones we are faced with as we speak today, especially in life sciences and the big data arena, which is a very fascinating issue that is going to derive many, many discussions by scientists all over the world, I think we need to keep in mind that working together in a multidisciplinary way is the only way to go. That's the message I would like to give from my end. And hopefully more people will be interested in this type of problems. We need more female engineers as much as male engineers or scientists or clinicians to get into this and try to learn a little bit more about what are the main problems that are facing us and what we can do even while being in high school that will lead us to be part of those teams that are trying to solve these challenging problems. I am Delilah Magaby, and I am a faculty member within the Electrical and Computer Engineering Department at UNL, and I'm also the director of the SeaMind Research Center at UNL, which I founded and I'm a director of. CMIND stands for Computer Machine Human Intelligence Networking and Distributed Systems.
So you decide, has this really been the voice of reason? Listener comments are welcome at 214-329-4949. And please tell us your name and where you're from.
You've been listening to The Promise of Tomorrow with Colonel Mason, the definitive program on emerging and nanotechnologies, now archived and streamed on the web at promiseoftomorrow.biz. Join us next week at the same time as we learn more about the promise of tomorrow.
I am waiting for you.